Yes, it's quite interesting to see that it's quite interesting to see that there is no right of the way or respective right of the way, and there are no traffic lights. But still, the roads are full, the cars move, somehow they find a way to move and fill out the streets and move from one place to the other. So that's how traffic can be. And this is in Cairo. Let's see if I can move to another one. This is India. You don't have the sound. So this is India. What's special about the Indian traffic?
It's terrible.
Huh? Terrible.
Terrible.
Oh, well, they seem to move. They seem to flow in both directions with any kind of vehicle. Of course, this way you do. And so well, the striking part is this mixture of bicycles, rickshaws, tricycles, cars, probably also animals, all sorts of different kinds, scooters, all different sorts of traffic types. Okay. Let's see. Computer is very slow. Let's see another one. Okay, this is again India, and this is a crossing of buses and people and rickshaws and selling the streets. Okay, but no accidents. They move around. The streets are full, so the density is very high. There is some flow, some speed. So it's a possible type of. This is also interesting. I don't know if you have been to recently to Vietnam. This is Ho Chi Minh City. And it's interesting that they use a lot of motorbike. Okay, seems to be polluted because people are wearing masks. Not mostly motorbikes, very few cars. They don't. There seems to be no major rules, but this is it. So this is another possibility of traffic. Of course, it depends on the level of development, of the wealth that the people have. But let's skip to a very rich country. So let's go downtown Los Angeles. This is July. And this is approaching downtown Los Angeles. So this is along a highway, a major highway. And seems to be flowing pretty good. This is one of the many highways crossing Los Angeles. And seems to be moving. Let's go towards the city center. So let's skip a bit. You see also that. So you see there the high skyscrapers, the high-rise buildings. So, and of course they do also have congestion. So the flow is there. Okay, the density also. Going to downtown. The flow is there, but it's quite dense, and so the speed goes down. The speed goes down, it becomes quite what we call congested. Okay, there are some way out. This is the city center, this is downtown, and so yeah. So they have, even if they have 4 or 5 lanes that go in one direction only, but still it's pretty heavy traffic. Huh? And then the video goes up. Outside the city center, so the speed increases, getting out of downtown, so it becomes better and better. Okay, let's see another example. Another example, an interesting example. Let's do an Italian example. This is Naples.
Naples is famous for this heavy, chaotic traffic. Again, a mixture of motorbikes, cars, people, but moving. It's moving. And we did a recent comparison of Italian traffic among Italian cities. And in terms of number of accidents, Naples resulted the best. So, you can have density, but you learn to deal with it, and at the end, the end result in terms of accidents is not that bad. It's good. And I have also, just to balance between the north and the south, this is a video about Milan. I don't know how old is it. It is where exactly in Milan, but this is Milan. So this is the situation that we have also in Milan. So there is also congestion in the north. And now let's take what is supposed to be the best city in terms of traffic. Let's take Amsterdam. So this is Amsterdam. How does it look? More bicycles in Amsterdam. But this car seems... Is it parked or is it stopped there?
Stopped, it doesn't move, it cannot move.
Because the other one was coming out of the parking buildings.
That's possible.
But this guy has some problem.
Probably came out of the palace.
So he has problems crossing the street. Oh, well, you see lots of cars there are also some tanks in Amsterdam. So it's a combination of different modes that cross each other. So not an easy
I had the chance this summer to go to Amsterdam, so I went and checked if this was the situation. Well, I would say, in general, it's not that bad. It's not that bad, but it depends which area of Amsterdam. The city center, there are not very many cars, so the access to the city center is very much restricted and discouraged. The parking cost in Amsterdam for a car is €5. So it's they make it really expensive, very expensive for a car to go to the city center and to park there. Okay, so they discourage it. And they have huge bicycle lanes, both ways, separated, one direction, the other direction, two bicycle lanes. A bicycle lane is about at least this size. So two bicycles can easily ride along each other and on the bicycle. So the amount of road space allocated to cars is very limited. But it's not. I didn't dare to ride a bicycle in Amsterdam. It's not easy to ride a bicycle in Amsterdam. I think I wouldn't dare to ride a car. Car is difficult, so I walk basically, or I use the public transportation. So it's not also an easy traffic. So this is traffic, and this is traffic in city centers. Okay. So how do we make sense of it? What do we do with this? Shall we just leave it as it is, like in Cairo or in India? Shall we just leave it to the self-organized principle of transportation, let the people decide how to use the street? Or shall we regulate it? Shall we impose some limits, some rules, some traffic lights, reserved lanes and separated lanes? Shall we close some streets? That's the question. So it's the usual question, also in traffic, not only in economics, among the free market, liberalism, lets everybody do what they want, or regulation, impose some rules. What shall we do? And this is an issue. This issue, transport, traffic, is an issue that concerns not only the transport economists, but also the transport engineers. You know, there is a special field of engineering devoted to study transport flows and to regulate transport flows. At the end is a regulation between vehicles, drivers, and infrastructure. So how large should the roads be? How many roads? Should we have highways in the city so that that you can cross very rapidly the city, like in Los Angeles? Or should we have small roads, large roads? Okay, how much space should we devote to roads? Okay. And what should be the road network? Should it be one-way streets, two-way streets, reserve road streets, or pedestrian streets? And of course, if we are able to understand the traffic, then we can better predict traffic and regulate traffic. Okay. And but what should be the goal of traffic? So what should be the goal? To have empty roads? Probably not. Empty roads don't mean anything, right? Are no use. Empty roads. Should we have full roads? Roads very much used with a lot of cars that go through them. So what's the optimal situation for regulating traffic? Okay, so there is like a sort of a division of labor between transport engineering and transport economists, engineers, transport economists. The transport engineers observe, model, regulate traffic flows. So they go into detail, they study a specific area, they observe how many cars they move, okay? They model them, they regulate these flows, and they make all the detailed decisions about how many traffic lights, or roundabouts, what is the best solution, a traffic light or a roundabout? A one-way street, a reserved lane for cycling and buses, how large should the road space be for cars, for pedestrians, parking, how much parking is it needed, new roads, public transport lights, and so on. This is the task of the transport engineers. The transport economists add a dimension to this very detailed specific model, modeling. They study the interaction between transport activities, the localization of transport activities, both residential activities and work activities, and the generated traffic. Because traffic is the result, traffic as like transport is a derived demand. You don't move just for the pleasure of moving, but you move to go somewhere. You move to go to the university, you move not to work. So you have a purpose. Now, this purpose depends on where the universities are located, where the houses are located, where the shopping centers are located, and so on. So economists help engineers understanding why traffic is generated, and so how to regulate the economic activities in order to have more or less traffic. And of course also transport economists study another important factor. Transport economists study individual behavior, how do people behave, and what is the impact of the financial policies on traffic and transport decisions. So, for example, Italy is one of the countries that has the largest number of cars per population. We have about 600 cars per 1,000 population. Other countries have less. But also, other rich countries have less cars than the case of Italy. So why do we have so many cars? Depends on many reasons, but of course there is an effect also on the purchasing price of a car, of the vehicle, of the taxes that are imposed on the vehicles, on the, there is an effect of the fuel cost, on the tickets cost for public transportation, on the parking fares, rents, and so on. So another important task that transport economists a task that they solve, that they work on, is understanding choices, understanding modal choices. Engineers have studied transport in a very systematic and empirical way. They observe and measure traffic going through specific roads. So they measure it. This is historical, as Professor Greenshields measured traffic in the 30s. So they had a camera, and the camera was connected with a timer. And so it was able to read the speed at which the car was moving. Okay, so this is an example of reading the speeds. And he noticed, why is that in Italian? No. Well, I forgot to try to change it in Italy. He noticed that there is this evidence. So this is speed, and this is density. And he noticed that as density increases, speed decreases. So let's go back. What is speed? Speed is the distance traveled per unit of time. So how many kilometers do you make in an hour? Okay, that's speed. What's density? Density is the number of vehicles per unit of space. So it's how many vehicles are in a certain time located in a certain road length. So let's say 1 kilometer. In 1 kilometer, how many cars are there? Okay, that's the density. So the density is the number of cars that you see on the road. No? A full road is a dense road. Okay. What's flow? Flow is the number of vehicles passing through per unit of time. So flow is it's the number of vehicles that in a unit of time, for example in 1 hour, pass through a certain location. So this guy, this Professor Greenshields here, was measuring the flow, the speed, but was measuring the flow. How many cars? No. That means like being there and counting the cars. How many cars can you count in an hour? That's the flow. And these three traffic measurements are connected. Density is the flow over speed. Speed is the flow over density. And the flow is the density times the speed. So that's why you have these relationships, no? As the density increases, the speed decreases. More cars you have on the road, lower is the speed that you can go through. And what's the connection with the density? The connection with the density is, and the flow, between density and flow. Connection between density and flow, experimentally, it seems to that as the density increases the flow, because flow is density times speed. No? As the density increases, the flow increases, but then it seems that as the density goes over 100, the flow remains constant. So that means you have more cars, of course, but the speed decreases. Since the speed decreases, the flow does not increase, and it seems also to start declining. Okay, and this is the linkage between speed and flow. So here you have this parabola, this inverted parabola. So taking this experimental observations, measurements, there seems to be this linkage this relationship between speed, flow, and density. Speed decreases as density increases, or as density increases, speed decreases. As density increases, flow increases, and then goes back. When the density is very high, so it means that the road is completely full, no? You come to a standstill. You come to a situation where the speed goes to zero. It's called gridlock in the transport literature. Gridlock means that nobody moves. Okay, we are just stuck there. Suppose a bit the situation in Cairo, maybe, no? Where the density was so high it was impossible to move. And this is 45 degree line, and so here you get the connection between the flow and the speed. If you are able to increase, let's say, if the flow increases, speed increases, but then you get to a maximum amount of the flow, and then the flow, as the speed increases, the density, as the density is reduced, you get this inversion of the line. Okay. So another more straight relationship between the curves is this one. Instead of having the curve, you just draw this straight line, and so it becomes exactly like this. And this is called the fundamental diagram of traffic. So the relationship between speed, density, and flow in a traffic, in a physical relationship. Okay. What's the best situation? What do we want to have from a road? What do we want to do? We want to be. Do we want to have the maximum speed? Of course, from an individual point of view, of course, yes. I like to have an empty road and be able to go to the road as fast as I can, from the individual point of view. But from the social point of view, from a society point of view, from an engineering point of view, or economist point of view, where do we want to be? We don't want to be here, right? Speed zero, maximum density, no, that's really not. That's not good. So what do we want to do?
We should maximize the flow.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's correct, the flow. The flow is, it means balancing out speed and density, right? That's why, no? Maximum flow means that you actually use the road, right? Not just one person, but enough persons, but they move, okay. So, in our cities, where could you find the maximum flow? In which cities? Was it Cairo, was it Ho Chi Minh City, was it India, was it Naples, was it Amsterdam? No. What was the maximum flow? No. I recently, I was not able to have it here. I recently talked with a transport engineer of the University of Trieste. It's called Professor Giovanni Longo. And the transport engineers at the University of Trieste prepared the plan for the river. The river are the main roads along the river, no? And they were very happy with the result because they enlarged the road space and then they introduced new traffic lights and with a different timing of the traffic light. And they were able, thanks to this improvements to get higher speeds and a larger number of cars that went through the river.
So they were happy, basically.
From what you said, they say that now you have the maximum flow of the river.
The maximum flow, so more cars, a lot of cars, but moving quite very fast.
So an engineer, yeah, I agree, would say maximum flow.
As you will see, an economist does not agree with the maximum flow idea. But we'll get to that.
So before we move to the economist's point of view, let's see two important equilibrium concepts that the traffic theorists, engineers developed. They are called Wardrop's first principle, or user's optimum, and Wardrop's second principle, or system optimum. So, first of all, this Wardrop was an engineer, an English transport analyst, okay? And he said, he developed two ideas, two principles. One is this, from observing reality. It says, the journey times in all routes actually used are equal. So he says, in a traffic situation, if you have two roads, let's say you have let's say you have a straight road from A to B. You have a straight road, and then you will have a longer road. Okay. Let's say we can have this. This is an highway. You have an highway, and or well, let's say a road. The highway is a bit too long. Let's say just a road. Okay. A road to go. Yeah, okay. And you have cars that want to go to A from A to B. So here you have cars that come to. Okay. There are two possibilities. What do people do? Well, first, some people would definitely choose the shortest way. And so initially you have a lot of cars on the shortest way. So on route one, actually the Americans say route one. Let's say route one like the Americans. Route one. And this is route two. Okay. So initially people will use route one. But then, as more people get into route one, somebody will think, well, maybe if I take the longer route, I will save some time. Because this has less traffic, it's emptier, it's less traffic. So some people will go to route two. Okay? And you'll have more and more cars that go through route two until they reach an equilibrium. In this route one, you'll have the traveling times equal to the traveling time of route two. Here you have a longer route, of course, so you expect the speed to be higher, but at the end, the traveling time is the same. So, Wardrop says, in the real world, the journey times in all routes actually used are equal. They tend to an equilibrium because they tend to people tend to choose their best option until they get to an equilibrium point. That's the user's equilibrium. But is the user's equilibrium equivalent to the system equilibrium? What is the system equilibrium? The system equilibrium is when the total travel times are at a minimum. So that means this, you have a system equilibrium when the travel times for the entire population are the minimum possible. and his observation is that this two equilibria might differ. And so if they might differ, the role of the transport regulator, of the transport planner, is to introduce rules such that you have an improvement in the system, you have an improvement in the overall transport times that are better than the user's equilibrium. So, for example, let's imagine to have a city with no rules, Cairo type, no? At least what seems to be Cairo. Cairo type, a system with no rules. Okay, you have a user's equilibrium. People find the best way to squeeze in the traffic and to find the best route in the traffic. Okay? But now let's introduce, let's put a traffic light. Let's put a reserve lane. No? Let's introduce the right of the way. So you have to stop and then left. Okay. If that produces a decrease in the total travel time for everybody, then you have reached a better equilibrium than the system equilibrium. So the task of this traffic engineer or transport economist or planner, let's call it planner, the planner is to get a better solution for the system as a whole, better than the individual, the one based on individual decision making. So as you can see, in transport, you have a situation that is not different from economics. No? In economics, you can have a society with no rules, where everybody can decide what to do, okay? And a society regulated by rules, with some government regulation, with some with some taxes, some prohibitions, the equilibrium that you get with the regulation is better than you have improved over the free world, let's say, no? Free enterprise. Okay. And regulations can be quantitative or can be economic regulations. And the typical, the quantitative regulations are physical regulations, right of the way. You have to let first the people that go from the come from the main road go through. Access restrictions. You can have restrictions that like you cannot go into the city center with the truck after between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock in the morning. Hmm? Or access restriction. These roads are for pedestrians only. You cannot go. Or for bicycles. Reserve lanes. Traffic lights. Okay. Economic incentives is different. Economic incentives are not physical regulations, are incentives, are subsidies or charges or taxes imposed on certain behaviors. So if you want to have a car, you have to pay a tax. If you want to go into the city center, you have to pay a charge. If you want to use a petrol car, you have to pay, or a diesel car, you have to pay a fuel tax. So that's a different approach, where you are not obliged to use an electric car. But if you use a petrol car, you have to pay a higher tax. Okay. That's an economic incentive. That's a different approach. I will show you that the economy solution is not the maximum traffic flow solution, but it's the solution where the marginal cost of road are determined through a congestion charge. So now I'll skip to what. I forgot I have another one. This is how the. This is. I wanted to have a slide on how the transport planners design their traffic, their transport models. And they use frequently, if you read this literature, you'll find it, this goes under the four-stage model. A model that they use in which they examine the generation, so how the transport decisions are taken, the traffic decisions are taken, what generates traffic, distribution among OD pairs, origin destination pairs, the modal split, the mode choice, and the route assignment. This is the typical way of thinking of engineers in transport regulation. But let's go now to the congestion pricing idea economist. So that this will, you'll see what the economic reasoning, economic thinking adds to the engineering point of view. Okay, so here this is the these are the diagrams derived from the previous diagrams, from the green shield diagrams. So speed and density, flow and speed. Then you get this is in different details, and then you finally get to this diagram where you have speed, you have flow, and you have costs. Costs. So we are entering the economics realm, no? So the way of thinking of economists, they don't think in terms of time, they think in terms of costs. And what is cost? What is cost is the cost of involving, moving in the space, okay? And the cost of moving in the space is connected with the physical costs, so the fuel costs, but it's connected also to the time costs. So the diagram for the economy is this one. So when the flow, the traffic flow is low, so you have a density, both density and speed, density is low and speed is high, then the costs remain pretty stable, constant. That means that you have a free flow situation. Free flow cost is okay. But when the density increases, flow also increases, but speed starts going down, and so the costs start increasing. So these are the average costs that start increasing. Average cost. Why do they increase? Because you have more people in the street. More people in the street means that more dense, less speed. And so in order to go from A to B, you have longer times. And time is cost. So probably also you stop and go more often, so you consume, so the efficiency of the vehicle is reduced. And okay. What is the equilibrium for an economist, from an economist point of view? The equilibrium is reached where the demand is equal to the cost. So the equilibrium point will be this one. So it will be Qn. And the equilibrium cost, in the equilibrium cost, the demand, so the willingness to pay, so the utility of a trip, is equal to the cost of a trip for each individual. Okay. But there is something else that we have to consider. We have to consider that a trip imposes a cost not only on the individual itself, but also on the other users of the road. So you have an externality, and this externality is called congestion. So what's the point here? So I'll say it again. Let's see if it is here. Yeah. So you'll be able then to read it in the slide and to go through again. The point is that when I decide with my car to enter in a road, I have costs. That depends on the density of the road. But I also, personally, increase the density of the road. So I also impose some congestion costs on everybody. I worsen the situation for everybody. And the more people enter into the road, the worse the situation becomes for everybody. So you have an externality cost. A cost that is imposed on others because of my individual decision. This is known in economics as an externality cost, an external cost. And mathematically, you can see it here. This is the total cost function. The total cost function is equal to the cost times the quantity, the number of people that go onto the road, times the quantity. Okay, and the costs are not constant, but depend on the number of people, on Q. In fact, they are increasing as Q increases, the cost increases. Now, if you calculate the marginal cost, not the average cost, if you do the average cost, okay, the average cost will be CQ, no? So it should be this curve, CQ, that's the average cost. But if you do the marginal cost, so if you take the derivative of this function, the derivative is equal to this one. Why? Well, just remember the derivatives. You first derive the first term. Let's derive the second term. This is equal to 1, and multiply by the first term, you get this one. Okay. But then you have to derive the first term and multiply by the second term, and you get this one. So this is, okay, the derivative of the first term multiplied by the second term. That's the derivative of a product, right? So you see that the marginal cost is actually higher than the average cost. This is the average cost, so this one. But the marginal cost is the sum of the average cost plus this term. And this term is equal to Q, the number of people in the road, times the increase in the average cost determined by the marginal user. So that's me, that when I enter into the road, I increase the marginal cost for everybody. This is everybody. Huh? So this adds a cost to the average cost for everybody. So the marginal cost curve is this is equal to this one. So if this is the marginal cost curve, in, from a social point of view, the socially optimal equilibrium is not Q1, but is Q0, QO, sorry, Q optimal. Why is this so? Because the social optimum is when the marginal cost is equal to the willingness to pay, to the price. So this is the social optimum. And what is this? This is the difference between the actual cost, social cost, and the willingness to pay. So that means that at QN, you are willing to pay this quantity, but the cost, the overall cost for the society are equal to this much. So that's a loss. Huh? And so this area, this sort of a triangle, this area, it's called the deadweight loss. It's the deadweight loss. It's the loss that you have if you don't do anything. If you let people decide how much to use the car without what? Without internalizing the social cost. And how do we in economics internalize the social cost? Usually through a tax, through a charge. This is called Pigouvian tax. Because this analysis that I just explained dates back to 1928 to Pigou, Arthur Pigou, to the towns of Pigou. Okay. And this analysis holds true for any kind of externality. So be it congestion, be it environmental externality, any kind of externality, you have this situation that the private equilibrium is difficult, is different from the social equilibrium. If the externality is a negative externality, the private equilibrium is higher than the social equilibrium. Okay. And so this graph, that's due to Lucia. This graph, it's the general graph of road pricing that internalizes both the congestion and the environmental damages caused by a trip, by the use of the road. Okay. How do we get to the social optimal equilibrium? We'll get to the social optimal equilibrium by introducing a charge, a tax. This is the Pigouvian tax. This red one here is the Pigouvian tax. What is the Pigouvian tax? It's the difference between the social cost, social marginal cost, and the average cost, the private cost. And here should be then with this amount. This is the Pigouvian tax. Okay. The difference between these two points. So from the economist idea has always been since 100 years to regulate traffic through a charge, to a tax. The tax should reflect the difference between the average and the marginal costs. And the effect of the trash would be to reduce the flow. That's why I was saying that maximum flow is not the best idea from an economist point of view. That's the difference between with the engineers. The engineers say that let's have the maximum. No, let's have the maximum, let's have the flow that is optimal from a social point of view. So, and that includes all congestion and externalities. Okay. So what happened? No.
What is it? Oh. Let's see. I forgot everything. No, there is another slide. Sorry.
So. So the economists advocated the use of congestion charges in order to regulate traffic for decades, you know, since 1928. And basically nobody cared. No? Nobody cared. Financial incentives on taxes on these incentives were never, were quite limited. In transportation, in traffic, or for traffic management specifically, because it's true that we pay taxes on transportation. We pay high taxes, no? What do we pay? We pay the vehicle tax, then we pay the circulation tax in Bolo, no? We pay the circulation tax, and then we, what do we pay also? We pay the fuel tax. Yeah, that's the vehicle tax. No? That's the vehicle tax, and then you pay the fuel tax. And that's a huge amount of money, because the actual cost of the fuel is about 60% of the cost of the price that you pay. Mm? About maybe even less. It depends from country to country, but in Italy it's about 50-60%. So what we pay for petrol is almost twice as much as the petrol cost, and that's true for. Why do the state impose a tax on petrol, on fuel? Why? In order to get some money to finance transport infrastructure. No, because of course the state needs some money and some taxes. They need to have a budget, and this budget goes to supply the public goods, any kind of public goods, including also roads, policemen on the roads, regulation, maintenance of the road, you know, bridges and tunnels and. So that's the main reason why we pay such a large amount of taxes on road transport. Okay, but we didn't pay specifically to use a certain road. We didn't pay, or let's be more precise. In Italy, we pay also a charge for using highways. In Germany, that's not the case. Germans do not pay for using highways. Highways are free.
Even in Calabria, we don't pay.
In Calabria and the south, they don't pay much. I mean, and not in Sicily, there are no charges on highways, right?
In Sicily, yeah.
In Sicily, no. Huh? Yeah. They have highways, but they don't pay taxes. Why? Why?
They are a mess.
Huh?
They are a mess.
The highways are a mess?
Yeah.
Well, it's a mess because they don't pay the charge, they don't have the money to restore, to maintain them.
Maybe.
That's maybe. No, of course, paying a tax is, paying a tax, but not in many countries highways are charged. That's for the guys. Now, not in very few. Usually, in developing countries, highways are not, or roads are not charged, because you want to promote mobility. Now, you don't want to and to charge the people so much. But of course, then, if the state does not collect that, then either it doesn't maintain or build the roads, that's true for probably from developing countries, or they are rich enough to get the money from other sources, so they don't need to ask them to finance infrastructure, the road infrastructure. That's the case of Germany and England. Please. Yes, yeah, it's true, the situation, yeah, it's true. To be more precise, in Germany, trucks pay for using the road. So, freight transport pays, trucks pay for using the road, but passengers don't. And as he said, they wanted to introduce a charge only for foreign transports.
But the European Commission?
No. But the European Commission said no. So at the moment, they weren't able to introduce it. Austria, they do have the vignette, Slovenia has the vignette. Spain, do you pay for highways?
Yes.
The cars pay, so there is a toll booth, and you pay. France is the same, you pay, England you don't pay. So in some countries you pay, in some countries you don't pay, but if you don't pay, of course, the state has problems. In fact, also Germany has problems with highways, with the bridges. Even the rich Germany doesn't have enough money to pay for proper maintenance. And the German guys are not here today, but you could confirm it. But this is something different. This is something different. Here you pay to enter a specific part of a city. So, and was called EcoPass, is, and now it's called Area C in Italian. So Area C, where C stands for congestion. Congestion charge. Okay. Is Milan the only city that applies this regulation? No. This is a list of all the cities that recently, so the first one you can see it here is Singapore, 1975, recently introduced charging to enter a city center. So this is like a ticket that you have to pay in order to enter the city center. Why? The main reason is congestion. So they use a financial system, economic tool, a charge, in order to reduce the congestion on the city center. Singapore is a city, but it's a city state, very dense. So they wanted to have to prevent people from using too many cars in the city center, not to have a situation like you see in some countries, including the United States, by the way. And so they introduced this scheme. This is called area licensing scheme. You pay to have a license to enter in an area. Then another big city that introduced this scheme is London. London introduced it in 2003 and still operational. In order to enter in the app, please do not talk. In order to enter the London city center, you have to pay a ticket. That is, I think it's either 10 or 12 pounds. So it's rather expensive. Stockholm is another city that has introduced this. Gothenburg. Sydney has this scheme, but only for a bridge. So you enter through the bridge, you pay. That's also common. Shanghai, I recently had introduced also this a toll on some roadways and highways. Hong Kong, starting from 83, Norway, Bergen, and also Santiago de Chile introduced a congestion pricing for urban freeways. freeways in an urban environment in a big city like Santiago, where you pay in order to enter. And this is Milan. Okay. So I'll show you some slides now explaining how they've done it in Milan, who has done it, who has introduced this policy. But of course we are interested in knowing, has it worked? Does it work? Is it worth it? And of course this is, we'll see, the results are not straightforward. Huh? The results are a bit mixed. You'll see. Okay, you know what Milan is, so I guess I don't have to explain you. You know that in Italy people tend to use a lot of the cars, and I don't know if you know, if everybody knows that Milan has a very, very poor air pollution situation. You know, the air pollution used to be very bad because of the adverse geoclimatic conditions. So the air tends to stagnate. They don't have the boras, they don't have the wind. Sometimes it rains not very little, and so the air conditions are very poor. And the same situation applies, for example, to Los Angeles, the same, and to Beijing, by the way. No? And to Beijing. So there are some cities that are less fortunate than others in terms of air pollution. So what happened was that Letizia Moratti, so it was a center-right government in 2008, decided to try a policy. It was called EcoPass. And this policy was set up like this. Okay, this is the city center, 8 square kilometers, so not very wide. This is the city center of Milan. This is called l'area dei bastioni. So it's the old city center of Milan. And you go through the city center, you go through 43 varchi, 43 main roads, and this is a varco. This is a varco. So in order to go to the city center, you have to pass through these roads. So what have they done? Well, they installed cameras. The camera read the number of the license plate, read the number, they checked if you have paid or not. If you have paid, okay, it's all right. If you have not paid, then you'll be fined. So that's okay. So I wrote it somewhere, but maybe not here. In a moment. So in order to get into the city center, you have to pay this charge, this fee, this EcoPass charge. Otherwise, you are fine. So it's the typical use of an economic disincentive to go through the city center of Milan. Of course, they had to decide the time limits, and they went from 7:30 in the morning to 19:30 in the afternoon, only on weekdays, not on Sunday. Okay, they called it EcoPass, Eco, in order to have it not only as a congestion but also as a pollution charge. In fact, what they've done, how they applied it, they differentiated the charge according to the engine class. You know that each car has a different engine standard, Euro 1, Euro 5, Euro 3, you know, you are familiar with that. It's different from gasoline and diesel, freight or not freight. So let's take the worst cars, the most polluting cars, the class 5. The class 5 is a goods vehicle, Euro 0, 1 or 2. For diesel or diesel cars is 0. Diesel buses, Euro F. So these cars in this class had to pay 10 euros, 2008, in order to get into the city center. So the idea is, okay, if you want to go to the city center, you can. No, there is no obligation. So it's not a physical, a mandatory rule. It's an economic rule. If you want, you can go through. If you need, you can go through. But of course, you pay. If you have a less polluting car, class 4, and these were the classes, okay, you have to pay 5. Class 3, you have gasoline Euro 1 and 2, you pay 2. And then there are discounts, then there are yearly passes for the entire year, and so on. As I told you, what is the technology? The technology is the automatic number plate recognition technology. So it's a camera. They read it, they check, and they check if you paid or not. You can buy a ticket, you can pay it online, no problem. They manage very easily. And of course, this policy was part of a package of policies. Was a set of policies, including traffic calming, new bus lane, and of course they increased the bus frequency. In Milan they have a very good underground transportation system. So, okay, they've done a pretty good job. And some users are exempted, they don't have to pay. So motorcycles, scooters, public transport, handicapped people, army police, these were all exempted, and residents were exempted. Okay. Because we have always balance out, no? Between, when you apply these policies, between different needs to travel and to cross the city and so on. As it worked, this is an article that we wrote on this policy. And in order to answer this question, why is this question difficult in terms of air pollution? Why is this question difficult? Because air pollution does not depend only on traffic, but it depends on the weather conditions. So if it rains a lot in one year, then the air is much better than if it doesn't rain. Okay. So Milano, number of days exceeding the PM10 threshold. You know that there is a threshold, a 50 concentration, 50 PM concentration level threshold that's enacted by the European Union in order to protect the health of the citizens, that should not be over. In Milan in 2007, 132 days, this limit was exceeded. One day out of three was exceeded. In Turin, that is the city that we use for comparison, 146. So almost one every two days, this limit was exceeded. So even in the summer, this includes the entire year, all the summer, where the weather conditions should be more favorable. So they started out by a very, very, very bad situation in terms of air quality. And 2008 was introduced, 2009, 2010. So if you read it like this over the years, okay, they improved, Milan improved, so it seems it will be working. If you read it, comparing it with Turin, where there was no such a policy, other policies, of course, no eco-pass policy, Turin also reduced. So, has this specific policy worked or not? It's not that clear. Huh? It's nothing. It seems that there was anyway in these years a favorable weather conditions that improved the situation. If you I don't have the other years to 2017, but I know that in the last 2 years, 2015-16, the weather conditions have been very bad. And so the number of days exceeding the limit is again gone very, very high. Has it worked in terms of traffic? In terms of traffic, you'll read here carefully, it has actually worked. It has reduced the number of people that go through the city center by quite a lot. 42% less, 22% less. And it's also interesting to see these figures. First year, 42% less, 23, 16, 15% less. Why this decreasing impact over time? What's your guess? So it seems that in terms of traffic and congestion, that this policy becomes less and less effective. Why? What do the people from Milan do?
People use public transportation.
Well, that's a possibility. But another thing that they do.
Plus one, plus two.
They buy another car. They buy a newer car. If they buy, you see, class 2 was Euro 3, Euro 4, or more recent. Well, what kind of car do you have? No idea. What kind of
Euro 6?
Euro 6, Euro 6. So, you do Euro 6, you don't pay anything. So, the natural tendency now of cars is to get better and better, and the people that had the bad cars substituted the worst polluted cars with newer cars. Okay. That's good. Now that means that they pollute less. So that's good for pollution. But in terms of congestion, now that doesn't work because now they can enter the city center without paying anything. So this setup of the policy, very logically, very consequentially, improved or seemed to have improved wear condition, but traffic congestion conditions improved at the beginning, but then less and less. And so what has the Milan done? Has introduced another policy. And this policy, they changed the name, they call it, instead of EcoPass, Area C, where Area C stays for congestion area. So now they say, okay, forget about pollution. You pay for the congestion cost. This externality is the congestion cost. Okay, so it works the same way. So the same area. Okay. More or less the same rules, but now the tax structure changes. Okay. And how does it change? Well, first of all, you see that the 10 euros is disappeared. Nobody pays 10 euros. But you have Euro 6. You are a non-resident, 5 euros, sorry. Some of you have a diesel, maybe an old diesel, 3. They cannot get through, bang. You have an old gasoline, I do have an old gasoline car, by the way. Euro 0, I couldn't drive in Milan. I'd be bad. If you have an electric, If you have a hybrid or if you have a scooter, you don't pay. So what's the effect of this policy? Of course, the effect of this policy is, well, if you have a high polluting car, you get rid of it. You don't use it in Milan, in the city center. If you want to buy a new car, then you think about maybe I'll get a hybrid or electric car. Mm-hmm. And if I have a car that runs with gasoline or with diesel, unless I am a resident or I do it for commercial reasons, then I have to pay. So if you go to Milan and you want to cross the city center, you pay €5. So it has become a mixture, but a different mixture of congestion and pollution. No. There are two slides. One is early results and later results. Because as you have seen, the effect of this policy depends. Huh? At the beginning, there is an effect, but then people adjust. Huh? And so you have then different results. Well, the initial results were very good, 33% less cars entering the city center. So Milan now is emptier, less vehicles in the street. So substantial decrease in traffic congestion. The congestion car charge did not appreciably affect pollution levels, with the exception of black carbon level, which decreased by 20-30%. So in terms of pollution, we don't yet see an improvement. The use of car decreased also outside the area, and another important effect, less cars in the city center, higher speed for public transport. Mm-hmm. So buses now move more quickly in the city center than before because there are less cars. Early result. Later results confirm decreasing trend in traffic congestion. Mm-hmm. So there is no way to escape unless you buy an electric car. And so far, the people from Milan did not buy an electric car. So there is no way to escape. So traffic congestion still is reduced. And according to a study that is quoted here, we have performed a similar exercise and we got the same results. This policy was beneficial in terms of welfare, social welfare. Hmm? So that triangle that I showed you before actually shows that there is big a beneficial. Of course, there is another important aspect in these policies, in the financial policies, that you don't get with the quantitative policies, that you raise revenues, you raise taxes. No, the charge goes to the budget of the city of Milan. So you raise some money, and with this money you can invest in doing something else. So you car sharing schemes, bike sharing schemes, public transport, pedestrians, parks, whatever. Okay, this is a real world application of one of the measures that we discussed about.